Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is a man suffering from a crisis of infinite lost possibilities, Kyle JCRB Krause.
That is an apt way of putting it, but we'll be getting to that in a little bit. We'll be getting to that a little bit later. I hear some wild things are going down on your side. Things have been working on some exciting things that have finally been revealed, which is really cool. So,
yeah, the knowing smile is my way of coping because I'm terrible at keeping secrets and I have to keep some secrets. So as long as I knowing smile, then at least I could say that I know something. But yeah. Very happy to announce, if you didn't catch it, that I have joined the Rivals of Aether team as their narrative director and a staff writer. Rivals of Aether, if you don't know, is a Smash Brothers-esque fighting game full of colorful animal creatures with superpowers. So, you know, very foreign to what I write.
Totally.
I was brought on to do a miniseries that is still under wraps. And they were so impressed by what I was able to do with their material for that. They said, hey, why don't you just write everything that we're doing just to make it consistent? I'm like, yeah, sure. Why not?
Yes.
As a narrative director, basically it's my job to be a turbo nerd on all of the Aether lore and what's come before and what's coming up and more or less be an idea guy. It's like, hey, I have an idea. Should we do this in the game or in another project? Yeah, it's cool. Awesome. Here's the invoice. Basically been the dream job I've been working towards for a while. I've wanted to get more into the video game industry. I've wanted to write more. I've wanted to do it in a creative capacity. And I mean, there's certainly guidance. And the team has been absolutely great to work with. So it's just been a great deal start to finish, and I'm really excited about what we're going to be producing in the upcoming years. So if you haven't given it a shot yet, it's out on Xbox One, Steam, and the Definitive Edition is coming to the Switch fairly soon. So I can't remember if it's on the PS4 or not.
I think so. It's been on a lot of things. It's been around for a little while.
So it's got a large cast of characters. I need to actually sit down and play it myself. All I know is the lore. But no, I'm excited for it, and they're happy to have me, and it's just a good deal overall.
Oh, that's awesome. I have.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. I just wanted to say that I've been kind of casually following the Rivals of Aether, basically the team, I should say, since before Rivals, when they were working on the Super Smash Brothers fan game, Super Smash Land, which is a Game Boy style recreation of Super Smash Brothers, which is really cool and really well done. So that, I believe that project is what sort of launched coming up with an original Smash Brothers like fighting game.
Because I'm sure Nintendo hit them with a cease and desist at some point.
No, actually, I don't think so. Weirdly enough, I don't think so.
I think it's so tight on everything else.
I think you can still play it. I think you can still play it. But either way, that was a really cool game. And I'm really glad that the team has gone on to do something even cooler, more successful, and more awesome. So, actually, there it is. Yep. No, the SuperSmashLand.com still up. You can still download it.
All right.
So, and it's free. So, some of the folks who worked on the soundtrack, actually, I think it's just one. No, it's two people who worked on the soundtrack as well. You can download the soundtrack there, which are like remixes of tracks, Game Boy style remixes of tracks from Smash Brothers. So
nice.
by Inverse Phase and Flashy Goodness, I believe Flashy Goodness is still working with the Aether team. So that is pretty awesome. So yeah, hey, check that out, and then check out Rivals of Aether too. I keep wanting to call it Rivals of Aether. That's how it's been in my head, but there is that A there. So yeah, I don't know. I mean,
it may be the proper pronunciation in that scenario, but English is kind of a if the English language was a person, they'd be kind of disheveled, possibly drunk, kind of staggering down the street saying, "That's mine. That's mine. That's mine," pointing at all the other languages. So
yeah. That's true. It's a good point. Yeah. So, yeah. But that, yeah, that's really cool. So, as for what I've been up to, not a whole heck of a lot. But you know what? That's okay. Just been doing Nitro Game Injection, of course, still every week. Head on over there, kngi.org. Hosting that. There's been a lot of releases lately. I wonder why. It's almost like everybody's cooped up at home. So lots of new music going around out there, lots of awesome video game music remixes to listen to and enjoy. So yeah, I'm having fun with that.
Now, something you have been doing to pass the time is
yeah,
watch one of your favorite television programs. And you wrote me into this when they did the Crisis of Infinite Earths crossover, and that was fun.
Yeah.
Wouldn't call it award-winning, but, you know, they set out to do something ambitious, and by dingy, it was entertaining for what it was.
Yep.
But Supergirl, the television series, has recently come to an end, from my understanding.
Well, the season has come to an end. It's not over.
Okay. I thought this was the last season, from the way you phrase it, or was that just wishful thinking on your part?
Well, I mean,
drag it out behind the shed and whip out the old kryptonite bullet.
I don't want it to end, actually. I want it to get better.
See, when we were discussing on what to discuss for this show, I said, Kyle, the medication, I have to take it more. My voice is not the best. Is there anything that you might want to take the lead on? You said, well, Supergirl is ending this, or is wrapping up its season. I have issues with it.
I do. I really do.
And angry Kyle is the funniest Kyle. So
really?
Please, sir,
okay. How often am I?
The floor is yours.
How often?
Senator Krause.
How often am I angry on this show? Not very. Not very
Not
often.
Very, which is why it's so entertaining.
Okay,
so,
okay.
Ladies and gents, I'm just going to sit back and enjoy the ride.
Okay.
Maestro, play on.
All right. So, Supergirl. It's been on the air since 2015. Started out on CBS. I have been enjoying the show for most of that run. It's had its issues. I will say it is not like amazing television. This is not a show you watch because you want to have your mind freaking blown for like dramatic purposes or whatever. I don't know how to describe it exactly.
Guilty so, pleasure?
Yeah, kind of. I'm not that guilty about it, but well, maybe after this season. But I mean, it's fun. It's entertaining. Usually I'm one who says I'm a simple man. You give me awesome bat girls being awesome batches and I'm set. But this is, turns out I do need a slightly little bit more depth than that. And that's been one of the problems with season 5. So yeah, season 5 just wrapped up for Supergirl and for the main Arrowverse shows. And the ones that I watch, I've been mostly enjoying, but Supergirl's had some problems. So I guess let me set the stage for like the basic premise of the show. Essentially, it follows Kara Danvers, Supergirl, starting back in 2015, where she first becomes Supergirl and reveals herself as Supergirl to the world. Not Kara Danvers is Supergirl, it's secret identity, you know, the whole thing. But essentially she becomes Supergirl, and the series starts off sort of as her her journey to getting out of the shadow of Superman, essentially, and becoming her own person and her with her own ideals and stuff. So she has a sister, an adoptive sister, Alex Danvers, who is one of the other leads of the show, one of the other main leads. And she is a secret agent for the agency called the DEO, which is the Department of Extranormal Operations, which is supposed to deal with, like, you know, powered people and aliens mainly. And so Supergirl joins the DEO and works with her sister to try and basically defeat various evil aliens that crop up. And that's sort of like the main conceit of the series from the beginning. So throughout, things have kind of shifted. Season 2 introduced Lena Luthor as another one of the main characters. And she becomes friends with Kara and is trying to work to overcome her... basically, she's also trying to get out of her family's shadow, sort of like Kara, in a way, but, you know, from a different angle.
Sure.
Because, you know, the Luthers, they're not exactly known for their, you know, not being evil. Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. So she, essentially, she takes over LexCorp, or Luthor Corp, I forget, actually. It's called Luthor Corp in this universe, that's right. She takes over Luthor Corp and renames it L Corp and becomes more of a sort of philanthropic organization and uses it to basically try to better humanity and make things a better place versus trying to kill Kryptonians, which is what Luthor Corp originally was. So this is when Lex is in jail at this point, so he's not even part of the series. They're not even bringing him in there, so that doesn't happen till later. So essentially it's those three are the main characters, and but this season has kind of shifted things and been really obnoxious about certain things. And it's not up to standards. The thing about the show is that it has, like, a lot of missed opportunities. The things I do like about the show are, first and foremost, the cast. They have a ton of talent. And they're really trying their best to pull what they can out of the material that they're given, which is not great. But the characters are likable and fun when they are able to be decently written. There's a lot of stuff that the show can have fun with that it tries to sometimes, but then it kind of reins it back. And I don't know. It ends up being way too ambitious and yet not ambitious enough. I don't know exactly how to describe it. I think it's like the characters are more entertaining and interesting than any of the plots they could come up with that aren't related to the characters. Like, if they try to introduce a new villain, it can be rough. Sometimes they do a good job. Like season 3, they introduce a new villain, Rain, who is essentially, she doesn't realize she's a villain. It's pretty interesting. She's Sam. Her name is Sam Arias. She she does join L Corp as their CFO, and kind of ends up being she is actually a Kryptonian, but doesn't realize she's a Kryptonian. And, like, she will have these random bouts of, just complete, like, blankness. she just won't know what happened, and that's when she has turned into Rain and like kind of goes on, you know, rampages and is just like pure evil, one of the best villains of the series, really. But she has another side to her that she doesn't even realize that she's doing this until later on. And so they're trying to figure out who Rain is, and it gets really, really interesting in that respect, where you have this very sympathetic and very likable character who also ends up kind of being a evil monster, but doesn't realize it. So you're very, she's very sympathetic in that you want her to get better. You don't want her to, you know, to die or anything. So I don't know. I kind of like that aspect. That was pretty cool. But it's been rough. It's been rough since then. So season 5, the show constantly, this has been a problem throughout its whole run. It constantly gets dragged down by being like way more complex than it needs to be. There's no reason. It could be so much better if they like focused on its cast, more on the cast and what they brought to the table, rather than trying to write these plots that just, they're not compelling. They're not that interesting. Season 5 has sort of the idea was supposed to be like a more Black Mirror or Twilight Zone-esque sort of thing about the perils of technology and how we're becoming too addicted to like tech and being, you know, drawn into other worlds and being drawn away from, you know, real life human interaction. A very common trope. It's been happening a lot, especially lately. But
a legitimate concern, something that's interesting to investigate.
Sure. If the show actually investigated any of it. So the show introduces the company Obsidian North, which is a company that specializes in communications and like social media technology, stuff like that. They've been mainly phones is what they had been involved in before, but at the beginning of the season, they start introducing Obsidian VR, and these contacts that basically you activate these contacts and you're all of a sudden in a digital world that is practically indistinguishable from reality, but you can make it whatever you want it to be. So one of the examples is there's a whole bunch of Supergirls in in Obsidian VR because a whole bunch of people want to be Supergirl. That's like the most that they explore that, really. They don't go into that other than like some people who they don't actually show any of it. But apparently some people are in there talking to like dead relatives and family members who passed away and stuff like that. So, but they don't really go into that. They like they mention it a couple times, and the show does very little to explore any of the implications of this throughout the whole season. It's just like, there.
Nobody in the extended cast who lost somebody in seasons 1 through 4, and
not really, no,
speaks to them again through the VR and gets addicted to being with them again and has a hard time letting them go and returning to the real world, but through the strength of the friendship of the real friends, they're able to find closure and cut themselves off and let go. None of that?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
No.
That's off the top of my head, Kyle.
Yeah, I know. I know you could write this show better than... I know you can write this show better than anybody else who's on the writing staff, most likely. And you probably take better advantage of the chemistry of the actors and the characters on the show, because the season spent its like entire time trying to desperately separate the two main important and interesting characters from each other. It's like, why would you do that? What are you doing? These are the two characters who we put them together, and they're like the best parts of the show. their interactions are the best, whether they're like dramatic or whether it's through their friendship. And it's just like, nope, we're not gonna have any of those. Like, we'll have a bit of that throughout the first half of the season, but then after Crisis, nah, we'll just take one of them and shove them off to the side and never ever let her out of her cage. And it's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? It's one of those things. So anyway, I'm talking about Lita Luthor, by the way. Lita Luthor gets her character freaking assassinated on this show. So she has, there's been multiple assassination attempts on her and her life, but they actually managed to successfully assassinate her character because, you know, this show. So anyway, where was I? They don't explore the VR stuff at all. Like, hardly. And I should recap. At the end of season 4, Lena and Lex end up facing off, and Lena shoots Lex at the end of the season to kill him. And in his dying breaths, he reveals the secret that Kara has been keeping from Lena since season 2, which is that Kara Danvers is Supergirl. The reason why that is a big deal is because there have been multiple times throughout the series, as contrived and dumb as it is, there have been multiple times where they sort of have been kind of at odds with each other. Not in that classic Luther super sense so much, but there have been times where they've had disagreements. Supergirl was very concerned about Lena being able to make kryptonite, for example.
A legitimate concern.
In a way, yes. But at the same time, she was also basically living another life where Lena Luthor is her best friend. And basically, it's Lena feels like she was misled and feels betrayed, because on the one hand, her and Supergirl have had issues in the past, but then Supergirl turns around as Kara and is all buddy buddy and her best friend, and mm-hmm. So there's kind of that feeling there of like of a betrayal of, you know, things like that. So there was a setup there you could have worked with. First of all, they dragged that out for way too long. They dragged out the reveal issue. It got to a point where it's like, yeah, if I was thinking, at least, like, if Kara ever actually revealed herself to Lena as Supergirl, Lena would just be like, yeah, I know. Obviously, I've known the whole time. But that's not how it went down. So, sadly, if it did, there wouldn't be any, this whole season wouldn't have even happened. So we could only hope. So anyway, this season also introduces a Leviathan, which are a secret cabal of immortal element benders. The show actually does call them that. They literally do refer to them as element benders. They talk about one of them named Ramakan, who is a they literally call him an earthbender. And
which is fine, because, you know, Ramakan was a fantastic show. Love, yeah. All the fans who came out. See you for RomaCon 2021.
Yeah, definitely. Not that kind of con. It's more like con, like, con! You know, from Star Trek, except I think it's K-A-H-N instead of the other way around, but yeah.
As long as he's not a Ramakin, that would just be silly.
That would be very weird, yes. So, Leviathan is very boring. They apparently have decided to co-opt Obsidian's VR tech to kill humanity because humanity is killing the Earth. So,
that old chestnut.
Yeah. So these are old gods who think like humanity is, you know, causing irreparable harm to the planet. And so in order to kill them all, we're going to use this company and its technology to basically kill them all. It's like, okay, cool, not boring. So what they do is, like, they essentially, there's a new character introduced this season, Andrea Rojas, who is the CEO of Obsidian, and she is secretly a Crata, an assassin who can, like, teleport through shadows and stuff like that. It's a pretty cool power, but, you know, it's not one we haven't seen before.
True.
But she's secretly an unwilling assassin for Leviathan, because they have, they basically are, like, her father, they're keeping her father alive, basically, and if she doesn't do what they tell her to do, they'll kill him. So
it's kind of petty for gods, but sure, why not?
Yeah. So essentially, they have infiltrated Obsidian and are going to, they plan to use the fact that there is such widespread adoption of Obsidian tech to kill everybody. It seems very, very, a very roundabout way of destroying humanity. I mean, it's very strange. Why would you go through that much work? If you are immortal gods who have the ability to literally bend the earth and other elements, why would you do that? Why would you do it that way?
Yeah, if you want to go the angle of, you know, destroy man by their own hubris for irony's sake,
they don't mention that. They want to do it like secret. I guess they do want to do it secretly, but I mean, it's not that secret when it starts to actually happen.
Now, does Ramada, whatever.
Nobody cares.
How vast are his earthbending powers? Are we talking like move a rock, or are we talking tectonic shifting?
That seems to be like more like tectonic shifting and stuff
so,
like that. It's
yeah,
pretty...
why doesn't he just reconfigure the eastern seaboard? Boom.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. So, Obsidian, like, for some reason, these Obsidian VR goggles have the most massive, end up with the most massive install base of any product ever. I don't know how. Like, they say something about, at one point, like, 4 billion people have these things. It's like, how? How do 4 billion people have VR contacts? Like, these contacts, they can't be cheap. Unless Leviathan is, like, subsidizing these and they're basically giving them away, I don't understand. But they never mention anything like that. So, if for some reason...
Well, Ramalama Ding Dong controls the Earth, therefore he's bringing up all the gold, he's selling it cheap.
Yeah, he's
financing these...
He controls... He has money. So, I don't know if Leviathan... Here's another thing. Toward the end of the season, it's revealed that Leviathan has a ship, a spaceship of some kind. I don't know if Leviathan are, like, aliens. Like, how does this happen?
God need a spaceship.
What is going on? Why does everything have a spaceship? Everybody has a spaceship in this freaking universe, because everyone's an alien. And Lena doesn't know it. I'm just like, what is going on here? What is this? So anyway, yeah, Leviathan sucks. They're boring. Obsidian sucks. It's boring. Three times throughout this series, at least three times, Obsidian, there's a literal countdown in the show where they are counting down to a launch of something Obsidian related. First off, it's the, when the show starts, the Obsidian VR contacts are in beta. So there's only apparently a few people that have them. And then for a little while, there's this countdown until finally they actually launch, and then they're out there, I guess. And then somehow, following Crisis, which we'll get to Crisis, by the way, because Crisis really screwed them things up. Which is not what I was hoping for. I was hoping they would use this opportunity to, like, I knew they would retcon stuff. I didn't realize it'd be retconning stuff that happened the episode before Crisis. Anyway. Anyway. So, essentially, and then later on, there's like this upgraded version of Obsidian, of Obsidian VR. They never exactly like define what makes this an upgraded version. It's called Obsidian Platinum. I don't know, and I don't know if this means like everybody gets the Obsidian Platinum upgrade. They never mention it. They never say exactly what it is. It's supposed to be like more believable, more realistic. Like you can actually kind of, you know, actually smell and taste things or whatever. It's very nebulous and it's not very well defined and it's not very interesting. So, and then eventually at the end of the series, at the end of the season, they have another countdown again, and this is in the final episode, because they're going to launch a like worldwide event in VR where everybody will be connected all at the same time, and they're going to use that as the opportunity to kill everybody. That's Leviathan's play, is get everybody all in VR all at once through some kind of nebulous event that's happening, that's sort of like supposed to bring everybody together or whatever. And yeah, that's it. They do this three times. Why are they using this? Why are you using the same countdown plot device three freaking times? It's like it happens over and over. And every time also, like, somebody in the show brings up that there's like a security flaw in Obsidian. They never, ever, ever freaking, like, every time it happens, the CEO, Andrea Roa, she like just waves them off. And she has like the same line three times throughout the series. It's like everything's just a repeat with her. There's like no real character development there. She doesn't like move on from that. There's nothing.
Well, they're holding her dad hostage, right?
Yeah, there is, so, but she's very she doesn't know that she doesn't know exactly that Leviathan has fully infiltrated Obsidian like this. She just knows that she just knows that they have her dad, or they'll kill her dad if she doesn't do what they say. But if she doesn't kill the people, she says, but they don't actually control Obsidian. Like, they don't control her through Obsidian. They don't tell her what to do in Obsidian. They just tell her to kill people. It's very strange. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, okay. I was afraid I'd missed something somewhere, but no. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, no, you didn't miss anything. Things just don't add up.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, you get plot threads and various arcs with new characters that are set up, and a lot of them are set up in, like, the first half of the season, which is, like, the first eight episodes before Crisis. And then immediately all of those like character arcs and like the character plots and new things that are happening, a lot of them are just retconned afterwards. So we talked about Crisis on Infinite Earths, but basically it was like the grand reset of bringing all of these disparate worlds together into one, bringing all of the Arrowverse shows together. Mm-hmm. That was sort of the whole point of it. I knew Supergirl would be going through a lot because it takes place on a different world from the majority of the rest of the shows, and has more of a has more of a connection to them, unlike Black Lightning, which was very self-contained until after the Crisis. So I knew that there would be a lot of changes, but what I didn't realize is that they would be making those changes to the season they were actually in. like
a bold narrative choice.
Sure, it's like why would you set these things up that happened in the first part of your season only to completely change them or get rid of them after a world-changing event? I get that the world is supposed to be different, but why would you set them up within the same season? It's like these seasons are overarching. They're supposed to be overarching narratives, But you're retconning things that are literally happening right in the middle of the season? Like, why would you set them up then? Why did you do that?
I can't imagine they would have begun production on the season and then been surprised by a multi-franchise, multi-television show, multi-staff crossover event. Unless the thinking was, you know, the crossover was going to be handled in a certain way. Do whatever you want beforehand. Here's where you're going to be picking up. And they maybe said, eh, who cares?
Maybe.
I don't know.
They did very little. And, well, they teased the Crisis on Infinite Earths like a year before it actually happened. Okay, so they knew it was coming. They knew it was happening.
I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. Things can be rocky, but no.
Yeah, they knew it was coming. They had foreknowledge, but they didn't even acknowledge anything of the Crisis. Like Flash and Arrow, from what I understand, I don't really watch either of them, but from what I understand, they had a lot of build up to Crisis. Supergirl had nothing. Just out of nowhere, all of a sudden, oh, it's Crisis time. It's like, oh, we have bigger problems than Leviathan all of a sudden out of nowhere. It's like, what? Wait a minute. What? Okay, I get that you're currently a different universe than everybody else, but I mean, maybe someone from one of the other shows could have warned you ahead of time. Like, nobody did. Nobody mentioned anything. So it's like, okay, you have these direct contact lines with the team over at the Flash. The Flash team could have said, hey, there's a giant world-ending event that's going to happen. You might want to be prepared for it. Nope, nobody told him. So there's zero buildup.
I watched Crisis in pretty much a vacuum.
Right.
So I would have assumed that it was a Supergirl-driven plotline because the Supergirl cast seemed to take priority to me.
In the first episode, yeah.
I just kind of felt like overall they were the linchpin of the event, and everyone else was kind of built in around them. But, okay. All right.
Nope. Not in the grand scheme of things, apparently. It's very weird. It's very weird. So, the things that got retconned were Leviathan revealing themselves after lying dormant for thousands of years, literally one episode before Crisis. This is when Ramakan finally reveals himself. He basically causes a giant volcano to shoot up out of the ground, which looks wonderful on the low budget TV budget that this show has. The very low TV show budget. I give them credit at least. They're ambitious, but they really need to, like, tone down the level of these storylines. I think that's one of the problems, is that they bite off more than they can chew. It's always like that, though. I appreciate their enthusiasm, but, you know, come on, work smaller, work with what you got instead of trying to do things that really just don't look good. Like, it's pretty clear that the effects budget just got slashed at some point, especially this season. And it's like, come on, guys, try not to be so effects heavy. You don't have to be this effects heavy. Batwoman fares just fine. I know Supergirl and Kryptonians in general are more of a cosmic force rather than the street level heroics of the Bat family, but, you know, tone it down a tad. You don't have to try and go all out. You can do something smaller.
Well, that's what you were saying earlier, is that if they focused on the interpersonal storylines,
right,
you can fill in a good 15 minutes of your 20-minute runtime and then save your budget for 5 minutes of razzle-dazzle.
Exactly. So the thing that, yeah, Leviathan revealed themselves one episode before Crisis, and then after Crisis, all of a sudden, they're, like, secret again. There's nothing, like, there's no ramifications for this giant volcano appearing out of the ocean in the bay of National City. Nothing. Nobody cares. It's gone. It's just gone forever. So
shows how much Crisis changed things. It's there for contrast.
Yeah, sure. Andrea Rojas being an assassin is retconned. They apparently never actually activated her in the new post-Crisis universe, so she's never been an assassin. She doesn't have any powers or anything. Nobody knows. So they set her up as like a secret, unwilling assassin for Obsidian or for Leviathan, and then never bother with it again until the last episode, where they finally activate her in this new universe. It's like, why did you set this up only to not do anything with it? Why are you doing this? And then I guess we have to talk about William, I guess, because he's very boring and there's no reason for him to exist. He is introduced as Kara Danvers, first of all. In her secret identity, she works as a journalist for Catco. Because of course she does, because she's a super, so she has to be a journalist. Apparently this is how things go. So
if you want to get out from under Clark's shadow, I'll be a journalist too.
Yeah, exactly. But she's a journalist for a magazine, not a newspaper. That's the difference.
Oh.
Well, another, she traded to a different dying medium. Anyway, so she's a journalist for Catco, and Catco is bought by Obsidian, and basically turns into Obsidian's propaganda wing. They never really explore this much beyond what I just said. It just is. It just suddenly is. So Andrea Rojas is Kara's boss. That's all you really need to know. They introduce William, who is a British journalist who apparently is supposed to be one of the best in the world. They introduce him as a real jerk. He's like just kind of a dick, for lack of a better word, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And he's faking being married. And he's just kind of mean to Kara and just picking on her for reasons I don't even remember. Like, I can't remember why he was picking on her. I just remember he's just like picking on her for no reason. So, but apparently he was actually secretly trying to investigate Obsidian and Andrea Rojas because I don't know. Because because of his best friend, Russell, who's introduced as the villain Rip-Roar right before Crisis. And then immediately they wipe that away afterwards and then kill him off. What? Why? So, but in the second half of the season, they try to pair Kara and William up romantically. And it falls completely flat. And nobody cares, and everybody hates William. And, like, it's no good. It's nothing about it is, it's not interesting. He's not an interesting character. He's only there as, like, plot exposition. He doesn't do anything. He just, like, he's investigating Lex Luthor for potentially killing Russell in the second half of the season. In the first half of the season, I think he's like trying to investigate. I don't even remember what he's trying to investigate. It's a completely screwed up mess because they retconned it. They retconned his reason for existing in the second half of the series. And he ends up being just a big nothing burger character. And it's pretty clear that they're like, it gets pretty clear at some point that they are editing around like William and Kara's interactions with each other. Because at one point they go on a date, and apparently, like, William had been so, like, poorly received, and the idea of them going on a date had been such a big issue with the fans of the show that, it's very clearly they hastily edited around the fact that they went on a date. Their date lasts for, like, 2 seconds. Kara is clearly very uncomfortable around William too, by the way. They don't have chemistry at all. Like, they don't get along. They don't seem like they like each other. At least Kara doesn't seem like she's really into William. So they end up going on a date, which is going out and playing pool. And this is like a 2-minute scene, maybe, in the show. And then it never gets brought up again. They bring Will. They later in the episode, they bring William in to do some like exposition dump, and then that's it. They never talk about the date. Nobody asks Kara how it went. Nobody says anything. It's just all gone. It's just wiped away. And it's like, well, then what was the point of that even happening? And it never comes up again. Nothing. And then any sort of romantic things between them that would have been in later episodes, there's nothing. It's just gone. Which is fine. I'm not complaining about it being gone, but I'm just complaining about the fact that they tried to set it up to begin with, thinking that it would be what people would be okay with. No.
That's kind of reaction to your audience, like, that used it as material. So the fans didn't respond to the pairing. Play with it. Have Kara, you know, reject him. How does he react to that? Why does she reject him? Well, for obvious reasons, but, you know, how does that affect William? Is it a wake-up call to him? Is it part of his master plan to investigate things? Is he just a skeeve?
I don't know. He ends up...
I'm having a question of, Kara's company gets bought out by the evil corporate overlords. She's a journalist. Why isn't she the one doing the investigating of her sinister boss and uncovering the connections with the space god alien peoples?
She is investigating Obsidian, but never figures out the connection between Leviathan and Obsidian. So she's investigating Leviathan. They never seem to figure out the connection between Obsidian and Leviathan until like the end of the season.
Okay.
And even then, it's kind of like just glossed over. Yeah, so this is a big problem. It's a big problem, this show. I've been going on for way too... It's been going on for way too long about this. Jesus. What is wrong with me?
Oh. That's all right. No. Lie back down on the couch and tell me where the show touched you.
It's like, why do I care so much about this? It's because I want to like the show. There's a lot of aspects about the show that I do like, and I think it could be so much better. But there's just so much of it that is like, especially this season, where I'm just like, oh, what are they doing?
Kyle, I am a lifelong career Sonic fan. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, true. I'm also a lifelong Sonic fan. But even, there's never been anything about Sonic that's gotten me like the way this has. I've never been annoyed at Sonic so much as this. It just doesn't, it's so weird. It's so weird.
Well, they must have done something right, because they got their hooks in you.
Yeah. I think a lot of that is just down to the casting and the actors and the character interactions. I like the characters. I really do. I don't know what it is, but I just don't like their plots, I guess. At least this season, especially. Season 4 was actually really good. There was a lot of good build-up. They had some good villains. They introduced Lex, finally, who was really compelling. This season, Lex is a lot less compelling, but that's probably a consequence of Leviathan also not being very compelling. So, anyway, it's just a mess. But anyway, they also established previous characters, like leads and supporting characters. The supporting cast gets sidelined a lot throughout this season. Season 4 introduced Nia Nal, who is the superhero dreamer. Well, she becomes that. And she's kind of like Kara's protege. She's both as a superhero and as a journalist, because she joins... she first joins CatCo as a writer, and then becomes a dreamer once her powers start manifesting and she learns that she's... Well, she already knew this, but she ends up finding out that she's the one in a long line of people who become dreamer. So she has basically the power to see visions of the future by falling asleep.
Okay.
And then she has energy powers too for reasons.
So you're saying you have a heroic character who is descended from a long line of similar characters with spiritual visionary abilities and energy powers, who's fighting a bunch of element bending villains. Is this season written by ex Korra and Avatar staffers? Is it Envy? What are we doing here?
It isn't, because it would be so much better if it were.
Hey-o.
No. But yeah, I see what you mean. But she was introduced last season before all this Leviathan stuff.
Okay.
So, but yeah, she like forms a rich relationship with Brainiac 5, who comes back from the future and takes over the team's tech role, because they're the guy who plays their old tech guy wanted to leave the show. It's fine. Yeah, I like Brainy. I like Brainy. Brainy is very good. Brainy is a lot of fun. But I mean, it's just kind of silly. So, anyway, she starts out the season working with Kara to investigate Leviathan, but then just gets dropped and has no role to really play throughout most of the rest of the season. After William and Kara start investigating Leviathan and Lex. That's really it. They just completely like drop her off from everything going on, and she doesn't really have a purpose, and it makes me very sad because she's a very good character and I like Nia a lot, but they don't utilize her. She could just as easily be the one doing the investigating and working with Kara, but nope, instead it's this new guy William, for reasons. Probably because they wanted to do some sort of romantic tie-in between her and William, but it obviously that didn't work out. So, whatever. It's fine. It's not fine. Oh, I forgot to mention also, Nia is trans.
No.
So, I think she's one of the first, if not the first, trans superhero characters on live-action TV, which is pretty cool. They could work with that. That's a thing. But nope, they drop it. They drop her. It's like, why? They had like one episode focusing on her, which is a really good episode this season. Each of the supporting characters and the leads who aren't Kara do at least get one episode, a token episode for themselves. But that's it. They rarely factor into the overall plot, and it's very sad that they do that, that they relegate them just to bit players in their own series. It's like, what the heck? You've established these characters previously, and now you're doing nothing with them? So, and then Kara's sister, Alex, in previous seasons, especially in season 4, she expressed interest in becoming a mother and wanting to adopt a child. That's never brought up again in this season. Just completely ignored. And then she's just stuck in a rut throughout most of the story. She doesn't do anything for most of the season. It's like they can't figure out what to do with her. And then she has a girlfriend, Kelly Olsen, Jimmy Olsen's sister. She was introduced last season as well. And they start dating, and they do very little to actually show them together. Like, for most of the episodes, if Kelly is in them at all, she has like one or two lines. It's just like, what is going on? Why you do this? You establish these characters and then you just don't do anything with them? What are you doing? Stop! Or don't stop. I don't know if I should tell them to stop or not. I don't even know. I don't even know what to tell them. So anyway, we're finally to the big issue for me for this season of Supergirl.
Oh,
this is the one that's freaking drove me up the wall. talking about the character assassination of Lena Luthor. Lena Luthor is my favorite character on the show. I think she is... The problem is she's too complex for the show. I don't know. Do you have you ever experienced that, Ian? In something where there's a character that is like really cool, very compelling, has a lot of depth, just has been established as like having a whole ton of like just backstory and as like intrigue about them, and then like the show does nothing to actually like support them, or it doesn't even have to be a show, it could be like a comic or anything, a movie. Have you ever seen that?
I'm opening up the dictionary under this and I'm finding a picture of Shadow the Hedgehog.
Okay, all right, yeah, I get it. Yeah, actually, yeah. Yep. All right. So, anyway, when Lena was first brought in season two, she was established as trying to get out of the shadow of her family, trying to be better than her brother, especially. She actively worked with Supergirl and with Kara against her mother, who is Lillian Luthor, who was also leading up her own evil organization, Cadmus. They were working together to try and take them down. And throughout the series, they had come at odds with each other. Like I mentioned before, Lena learned how to make kryptonite, which concerned Supergirl and kind of put them at odds with each other. And it's very weird, just in general. I get they wanted to go for the drama aspect of it, of like these characters who are best friends but don't realize, one doesn't realize that the other is her best friend, and so like there's this weird dramatic tension going on there. It's just strange overall, though, how they set it up. So they've kind of been, even though they established early on that Lena is desperately trying to not be like her family, not like her brother, and be more philanthropic and like takes over LexCorp and tries to make it a force for good. They keep trying to tease multiple times that, oh, is she going to become evil? Ooh. They do this. They do it multiple times. It's like, what are you doing? Why would you establish this character as being not evil and trying to go down a different path from her family and then be like, ooh, but maybe she is evil. You don't know. Why would you do that? I don't understand. Why am I talking like this now? So anyway, so that's one thing that I hate. I've been hating that since like she was introduced. It's like, whatever. She's pretty clearly established herself as not being evil. Why you say, oh, maybe she is? So, yeah. So anyway, the end of season four. We're going back to that because that sets up all of season five. At the end of season four, her and Lex are facing each other down, and she ultimately shoots Lex to kill him. Which I mentioned before. And then, for some reason, though, once Lex is resurrected following the crisis on Infinite Earths, she decides to work with him. For reasons I don't understand. She killed him, but now she's going to work with him. So, at the end of season four, though, yeah, in his dying breath, she tells Lena that Kara Danvers is Supergirl, blah, blah, blah. Lena is distraught by this and is apparently so angry that she is using the Obsidian VR to basically work out her aggression and give herself superpowers and punch Kara in the face. Which is funny. When it happens, it's very funny, but it's not very healthy, obviously. And it's just like, what are you doing? So
has she shown a tendency for these violent outbursts before?
Not really.
She's not a very physically violent character.
I mean, she's not like a physical fighter. She's not a fighter character, really. She's more of a, like a, she's an inventor. She's a scientist.
The fact that she pulled a gun on Lex at all, let alone it being her brother, was a big thing for her.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time she pulled a gun on a character, but the fact that it was her brother is a pretty big deal. The fact she actually pulled the trigger is kind of a big deal because she hadn't done that previously.
I'm pointing out
but she had
character dissonance here of she is not an overtly violent person, and now she's living out fantasies of punching someone that she has grown to trust and respect because of one small boo-boo.
Yeah. And the reason Kara gives two reasons throughout this, but the reasons that Kara gives are, first of all, she wanted to have Lena as Lena saw Kara as Kara. Her opinions of her weren't colored by the fact that she was Supergirl. So and Kara didn't have anybody else in her life who didn't think of her as Supergirl. So she wanted Lena as her best friend to just treat her as a normal person rather than like the way everybody else, even her own sister, tries to, or doesn't try to, but the way her own sister looks at her as being, you know, a Kryptonian with superpowers.
A reasonable desire.
Sure. And so she never told her because of that. And she also never told her because, you know, the old superhero trope of, you know, I don't want to tell you to protect you. I don't want you to get hurt because of me. And, you know,
right.
Even though there are multiple assassination attempts on Lena's life because of her association with Supergirl. That's never made a secret. So that doesn't really hold much water, as it never does. But those were the reasons she gives. But Lena is distraught because she feels like Kara was just using her and being her friend to watch her as a Luther. You know, she feels like the friendship wasn't real because she was just watching her because of her last name. She was just being her friend because she's a Luther. Just wanted to keep tabs on her, basically.
Also,
that is not true. That is not true. And if the characters had actually talked to each other for 5 minutes, they would have worked that out and figured it out. But obviously, they never did that because then there'd be no drama. Contrived
and the drama.
Contrived and annoying as it is. So, were you saying something before I cut you off there?
No.
Okay. So anyway, they ignore all the character development of Lena. Eventually, she tries, her plot this season is that she's trying to create a project to basically rewrite the human brain. And first of all, yeah, this has never been established before that Lena wanted to do anything like this. But she wants to, it's called Project Non Nocere, which I'm 99% sure is pronounced wrong in the show. I don't know how it's supposed to be pronounced, but I don't think it's that. Basically, but what it means is do no harm. At least that's what they justify it as, is do no harm.
I'm going to take a wild guess and say that it's probably butchered Latin, so it would be non nocere, but...
Probably, yeah. I think so. So anyway, she is apparently trying to work on this thing that will rewrite humanity to get rid of pain, because she doesn't want to feel pain anymore because she's been betrayed by pretty much everybody she loves. Like, her family betrayed her. She feels like Kara betrayed her. It's established earlier, her friend Andrea Rojas was her best friend before, and she betrayed her, so she's tired of feeling this betrayal, so now she's going to make it so nobody can tell a lie and everybody loves each other. It takes her 18 episodes to realize that pain is part of the human experience and switches sides back to working with Kara again after Lex. After working with Lex, who she goes and she doesn't show any sort of, there's no like, she doesn't show any remorse. She doesn't second guess anything ever. It's always constant, just one track mind on this project. She has absolutely zero, she doesn't voice any sort of thoughts that maybe she's doing the wrong thing until the last episode of the season, until the season finale. I was like, what? Are you freaking kidding me? Like, she's isolated away. The last half of the season, 99% of the time, she's isolated away from everybody else. Nobody comes to see her. I mean, she has working relationships with Alex and Nia, who could have talked to her. She never does. Nobody ever reaches out to her. Kara just kind of is like, well, she's working with Lex now, I guess. And it's, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you doing this? So anyway, so the retconning of Crisis also, she never mentions anything. She has no, she remembers everything pre-Crisis, because apparently that was the deal that Lex made with the monitor, was that Lena would remember everything that happened before Crisis on Infinite Earths. So essentially, even though in the new universe they had set it up to where Lex now owns the DEO and has taken back over Luther Corp, or not actually didn't take it over, is now still owner and is like a heroic philanthropist, which you may remember from Crisis.
Yeah.
Even though they had set all that up, or even though they had spent the last two seasons with Lena, or I guess three seasons with Lena working to get herself out of the shadows of her family and make a name for herself, she's immediately thrown back into the shadows of her family and is not distraught by this at all. She does not mention it in any way. She does not seem to care. Like, it doesn't matter. It never comes up. There's no showing her of, like, the idea of her, like, saying anything to Lex of, like, you took everything away from me. You made everything I worked for pointless. And it never happens. Never comes up. All she cares about is Nan no Cherry. It's like, what? Why? She's been established as this character who's so desperate to get out from under the shadow of her family, and then immediately, as soon as she's back in the shadow of her family, she doesn't care. What? No.
If she would remember pre-Crisis, she would know of all her gains. She would know that her brother had more or less stolen her life.
Right.
And that she killed him and that he's still around and that he did this to her. So...
I guess it's supposed to be like, oh, the devil, you know, she at least knows what she's getting with Lex. She fully expected him to betray her, but then she acts surprised when at the end of the season when it's like, oh, you've been misleading me this whole time. You've been leading me to believe I was on the right path with this project, but ultimately it's not going to work. It's useless. You're a monster. And it's like, well, yeah, we know you're a monster. You said this last season. You've already called him a monster at least multiple times. What are you doing? Anyway, what?
That's why she shot him.
Exactly. So it just completely, like, reset her character development. What? What are you doing to me? Ah! Anyway. Anyway, I think that's pretty much it. The second half of the season separates Kara and Lena from each other, isolates Lena away from everybody else, and until she actually like finally realizes what she's doing is wrong and is not working. Her and Lex try to test it on a prison where it does seem to work at first. She's working on prisoners where there's like one kind of, I guess, sort of nerdy guy who gets beaten up a lot, kind of bullied. And she uses Project Non-Nocherry to rewrite the prison population as being, you know, nothing but like nice and zen to each other. And they're all friends. But then eventually it comes out that as soon as they're like punched in the face or hurt by anything, their like fight or flight response kicks in and they freak out and they like go into a rage. And then the entire prison population, like it just cascades like a domino effect throughout the prison population, and everybody starts like killing each other. And then that's when
Miranda thing all over again out of Firefly.
Yeah. And then when Lena realizes that, or when Lena sees that, she realizes, oh, this is not going to work at all. And that's when she all of a sudden like is like, oh, you're a monster, Lex. It's like, yeah, we know you're a monster. She should know that Lex is a monster. He hasn't changed. He's still the same Lex from before. I don't know what she was expecting. So anyway. So finally, she goes back to Kara and is very, like, you know, tearful and remorseful and is like, I was wrong. I did the wrong thing. I never realized what I was doing until it was too late. And now they're going to use what I've made to kill everybody via Obsidian, VR, and Leviathan is working with Lex to do that. And yeah, so that's basically the whole season in a nutshell. Is it takes them like 10 episodes to finally get Kara and Lena back together. And yeah, so it was just a pointless drama driven thing just because. And I don't know. It can be compelling to have two characters who were previously friends with each other at odds with each other. The example I can think of, even though I have not had the chance to sit down and watch much more of it, is the new She-Ra, or between Catra and Adora, where previously, you know, they grew up together, they were best friends, and then Adora finds out that she's actually, or that she has the power. She has the power. Anyway, and then Catra feels betrayed and all that stuff, you know.
There's a lot
you can do that.
So that we could do a whole episode on just the two. Just Catra, but
no, yeah. It's a very similar thing. And you can do that, and it can be very interesting and engaging, and you know, good. The show tried to do that and failed. Failed miserably.
It was bad.
Yes. So yeah. Anyway. That's it. That's my rant on Supergirl. I think the
you
only
feel
thing
better now.
Yeah, I do. the finale was okay, actually, which kind of took the wind out of my sails of the season being annoying. It's like, I'm so mad, and then the finale aired and I'm like, okay. Fine. Whatever show. Jeez. It's like it's okay. The finale is okay. Even though it wasn't intended to be the finale because of the pandemic, but you know, they made it work. They didn't get the chance to film like half of the last episode because of the pandemic. They had to shut down production. So for all intents and purposes, the ending should have actually been a lot worse than it was. So you know what? Good on you. Good on you. You pulled it off. You pulled it off and pulled out something decent out of this turd of a season. So anyway, I think other than that, that's really it. So yeah, I'm ranting about a show like hardly anybody watches, and I know no hardly anybody's watching it, especially now. Ratings have tanked. Gee, I wonder why. It couldn't be because you've sidelined or separated all of your most interesting characters from each other, and your villains are completely boring, and nobody cares about what's going on. Jeez, it can't be because of any of that. Not at all. So anyway, with that, all I have to say is SuperCorp Endgame. All right. Anybody who watches the show will understand that, Ian. That's
okay.
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, that's it. Are we ready to get into the Q&A?
I am. Are you?
Yes, I am ready because I am done. Okay. I am done with this. I am going to watch the next season of this, despite the fact that I am super duper annoyed and at it. And it's just because, like I said, I like the characters and I like the actors. The actors managed to pull... They've managed to do the best that they can with the material that they're given, and they're a lot more talented than their than the material gives them credit for. So,
I felt that way about Game of Thrones, but I ducked out at season four when it started to go downhill. So
there are a lot of good things to like about it. There's a lot of things I do like about it. There were things I liked about this season too. The 100th episode actually happened this season, and it showed basically it focused on Kara and Lena's relationship and their friendship, and actually showed that whenever they're together, everything is great, but as soon as they're separated, everything goes to crap, which pretty much sums up the show in a nutshell, actually. And then there were a couple other episodes that were pretty cool. Nia's episode was really interesting, where she's kind of like, she's basically, since she's part of the trans community, she feels the need to like try and protect them. And at some point there's a guy introduced who's going around and harassing anybody who is trans. And she has to kind of wrestle with the fact that she desperately wants to kill him, that's not the heroic thing to do. So that was a good episode. Also completely not related to the overall plot of the season. So that's probably another reason why it was a good episode. Any episode not related to the plot of the season, not bad, not bad. So... Okay, I'm done. Q&A. You can email us, bumblecast@yahoo.com. You can ask us questions on Twitter at Bumblecast or via Ko-fi. That's ko-fi.com/bumblecast. Down in the YouTube comments below the video, you can leave your questions down there. Or you can leave your questions via Patreon comments, messages, or in the Q&A channel on Discord. Keep in mind that if a question hasn't been answered within the last few episodes, is on the FAQ, or is about past Sonic plans, we likely won't answer it. If your question hasn't been answered for a while, check both those places, and you might see your answer there. All right. So our first question from the priority Q&A this week comes from none other than Crooker. Not sure if this counts as Lost Hedgehog Tales territory, but I'll ask anyway. Was it being subtly implied that the Unified 7 Chaos Emeralds in pre-reboot were more powerful than the ones before the merging? Naga seems surprised he can do some things he can do, fixing Bunny. And Eggman and Sonic are suddenly able to use them to literally alter reality. It stands to reason that thousands condensed down to 7 would be more powerful, but was this an intentional implication left ultimately unexplored, or just me overthinking?
Actually, I remember this was a hotly debated topic on the old Bumble King forums when it happened. Writer intention here is that they were the same power level, because the Chaos Emeralds are supposed to be infinitely powerful. If you combine infinity with infinity, it's still infinity. you can't gain more from something that is literally unlimited. And then the debate turned into, well, clearly there is some limit because Enerjack was able to drain a bunch of them by himself. And it's like, look, the Chaos Emeralds were mishandled from the start. I did a very big hand-wavy giant panda god thing to get it back to game standard. Not everything's going to be perfect, but we're dealing with magical gemstones that are the wrong colors anyway, because emeralds can't be blue as far as I'm aware. So, and somebody's going to comment and explain how beryl can be multiple colors, I'm sure, but that's besides the point. Suffice to say, it was not supposed to be they were any more powerful. It was they were all just down to seven. And that Nagus' surprise was more due to the nature of his magic. He didn't quite understand what was going on. It was supposed to be a hint of his own abilities kind of going haywire. And Sonic and Eggman using it as game canon. You know, Sonic Advance 3 is Eggman uses a Chaos Emerald to split reality into pieces. You've got Super Sonic and Super Shadow warping space-time and putting the Ark back in orbit. That's what it do. That's what they do.
All right. Next question comes from Andrew D. Since RG Sonic Volume 1 is a world you presumably can no longer touch, have you thought about reading the fan continuation, RG Sonic Online?
Nope, no fan content, period. It isn't a matter of it being based on material that isn't being developed officially anymore. It's about the ideas. Archie Sonic Online might have a neat plot point, or they might have a character that does something in an interesting way. And if I were to go, oh, that's neat, and accidentally retain it and repurpose it for my own, some folks might be upset. Maybe they would be flattered. I don't know. I'm not going to take that gamble. So, no. No fan material.
Yeah, there's a few continuations. I haven't checked any of them out myself, but some of them look pretty interesting. So,
I wonder how salty they're going to be when Lost Hedgehog Tales does come out and doesn't go with what they wanted or what they've done.
I'd hope that they kind of expect that. They like realize like, you can go so many different ways that it's clear that obviously there's going to be some divergence.
That and Lost Hedgehog Tales isn't official material anyway, so.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's just as much of a headcanon as anybody else's.
Pretty much.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the standard Q&A. First up, we got one from PC the Unicorn. Is there any particular reason why Gemeral and Omega are more robotic in the IDW series continuity? In the Archie continuity, they acted less robotic and had more personality.
That is direct direction from Sega. In the old book, there were different circumstances that do not apply to the IDW book.
All right. Next question comes from Liam B. Was there any character or situation, aside from the obvious ones, reboot, you personally hated and had to write simply out of obligation? Do you have any regrets about the final product of the book?
The only story that I really did because I was told to that immediately springs to mind is Genesis, the four-part miniseries where it's kind of a quasi-reboot into classic Sonic. That was done for a tie-in to the anniversary, and it interrupted the big milestone story we had going on. I mean, ultimately, it kind of set the precedent for the Genesis wave that bailed us out when we had to jump through hoops with the full reboot, so it served a purpose in the long run, but yeah, Genesis is not my best work. It's phoned in. It's kind of sloppily put together. I could have tried harder, I suppose. And it kills me because it's one of the more favorite books out there. I will constantly get people bring it to be signed and say, oh, I love this. This was my favorite story. And I'm like, I'm so glad you enjoyed. I did not.
I liked it. I had fun with it. But I think ultimately the... What's the other, like, not reboot series, but classic Sonic series that you did that got cut off prematurely?
Mega Drive.
Mega Drive, yes. I think ultimately that one was much better.
Oh, yeah.
And because that one did not tie in. I don't know why I couldn't remember the name of it. It's like, you know, it's Mega Drive. I just feel dumb now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, there are certain things I had to do here or there. Editorial decisions that I, you know, to this day will say, no, I was right. But that's kind of par for the course.
Mm-hmm.
The story of the writer and the editor locking horns over artistic vision is older than time itself. So, but no, there wasn't anything that I really like hated, except for having to do the reboot, which you already said, yeah, that doesn't count. Clearly that was not what I liked, but
yeah. Well, you made the reboot work though, at least, you know, until it was unceremoniously ended, cut short, yeah. But you know, all things considered, I think there was a lot of stuff that worked really well in the reboot, and a lot of stuff that you had a lot of setup there that could have been interesting, and ultimately never was explored. And now I am sad.
This comes up a few times, but I kind of wish I'd been able to do House of Cards as I initially intended.
Yeah,
as the like year-long arc that it got to investigate the various characters and their political and personal affiliations and how that affected them.
Right.
Individually, instead of turning it into a two-issue Tails and Sonic hit each other thing.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, extended political drama is not something we really need in Sonic. I mean, I like to think I would have done it well, but at the same time, it's like, let's remember what the franchise is about.
Right. Mm-hmm. You can make these things work, but it's tough. You know, Star Wars tried that, and to varying degrees of success. Star Wars started out as a fun space adventure, turned into weird political drama and intrigue that mostly fell flat with most audiences, unless they were younger than 5 years old at the time it came out.
Ultimately, most of the notes that would either come in from Sega or, you know, something that the editor didn't like was a chance to be challenged and think around it. Case in point, there's something that we're working on for 2020 in IDW Sonic, where a core component was, you know, received well, but was deemed inappropriate for the franchise. And I don't mean that in an adult way. I just mean it was out of theme. Let me specify that before people go nuts with it.
Right.
So, you know, had to reconfigure things, and it led to some interesting new directions for one of the characters involved. So, famously, you know, Eclipse, one of the most well-received reboot characters, only came about because Sega said, don't use Mephiles. You know, so...
Yeah. There you go. Sometimes good things.
Like, I hate Genesis. It's just... I feel a little bad because people seem to enjoy it so much, and I know it was not my best effort. I don't know why that makes me feel guilty, but there you go.
Right. What about Heroes Unite? I know you've mentioned previously that was kind of... You're not entirely pleased with that one either.
You mean Worlds Unite?
Worlds Unite, that's what I meant. Not yeah. Heroes Unite. That's what I meant, Worlds Unite. Yeah. The second crossover.
That one could have... been better too. There were a lot of factors involved with that one, and
there's a lot of that story is a lot of really good moments, so it's got that going for it. It's like a lot of good moments tied together in a way that is not super great. It's not terrible by any means, but you know, there's certain
Worlds Collide was so good.
It had a lot to live up to.
When the encore falls a little short, it's like,
right.
It's all the more disappointing.
Right.
I mean, it would have been. I mean, part of it is we tried to hew too closely to the original crossover structure. I dug my heels in a little too hard on some of the thematic ideas without necessarily making sure that they worked best for the narrative. We were kind of hamstrung because all the cameos couldn't show up until the latter third.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, we have all the toys. Now we have to rush and throw them all in there. And on the one hand, a lot of the cameo stuff wasn't of great substance, but at that point, I kind of felt like it was more fun just seeing them all together.
Right. That's one of the things I enjoyed.
To showcase all these properties. Had we had the full 9 issues and such to develop them all, it would still have been a bit of a mess, to be honest.
Yeah, there was a lot. There was a lot. Let's just say that's a lot.
And part of it was because I wanted to make sure that both companies had equal representation.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of ballooned. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I got my Delphinia shooting Planet Sigma in the face, and that's all you really need at the end of the day, isn't it? Who needs cohesion? Who needs character? I got a flying gunship shooting a bald man.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, that would work with Supergirl, too, if they just leaned into that a little more often. I don't know. If they did something interesting or cool, you know, that'd be nice.
Kyle.
Anyway, wait, okay, we're past that. Okay, that already happened. We don't need to worry about that anymore. Anyway, last question, or nope, we got 2 more questions. Sorry. This one comes from Margo J. I want to ask a small question. Will you ever do an IDW Sonic Encyclopedia, like the Archie Sonic Encyclopedia, which I love?
I would love to. I don't think we have enough content for one just yet.
Maybe in a couple of years.
The book is still very, very, very new. And you know, if you include, it would mostly be just a rehash of the regular Sonic lore plus some of the original elements. I don't know how keen Sega would be on that. I don't know. But yeah, I would love to, but it's way too early to even think about it.
Yeah, you don't exactly have multiple decades of history to pull from like you did for Archie Sonic. All right, and our last question comes from Steph Cube. Did you have any special plans for Relic the Pika in the Archie Sonic comics?
This is kind of toeing the line with Lost Hedgehog Tales, but...
Maybe you can tease some things if you feel like it.
It's okay, because not really.
All right.
She was meant more of a supporting character. There was an idea revolving around her and Rotor and the ghosts from the Unleashed movie. But there was a scrapped idea with her and T'Call during Shattered World. But that's all either ideas that didn't happen or ideas that didn't happen that I haven't written down yet.
Well, that's a shame because I liked Relic. She had a lot of potential.
I really wish we could bring like her and Eclipse back. Wish we could port them over.
Yeah.
I'll add more to it, but those two, to me, I think would be the easiest to do.
We should port like a lot of characters over, but you know, it is what it is, I suppose. And hey, we got Tangle and Whisper, so it's all good. It's all good. Anyway, that's it. That's all the Q&A.
It is. Now, Kyle, since I'm starting to sound more and more like a broken reed instrument, would you kindly read out the names of all the wonderful patrons who continue to support this show, listen to us rant and wheeze, and make everything possible?
Of course I will. I would be honored to thank these lovely people for their contributions and helping us over at patreon.com/mumblecast. Big thank you to Daniel H, Alex P, Connell T, Salute Your Cat, Crooker, Blue Title Gamer, Koopaling Crew, Andrew D, Chris A, John B, Diane W, James K, Jennifer R, Torchbound, Lisa M, Owen B, Preston M, Frederick, Digama F, Wow, Justin S, Silly String, Tucaro, Scruffy Met, Lee HK, Overthink You Films, Don B, John M, Chavel, Mike B, Duiz Diz Din, Samuel P, Justin G, Sin Fritz, Dave M, Sam Cybercat, and Final Neil. Thank you, everybody.
Once the show wraps up, you can find me over on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC. You can see my whole resume of stuff I'm doing, including working with the Rivals of Aether team over at BumbleKing.com. Also check out my original comic series with Sonic veteran Adam Bryce Thomas. It's called Drogune. That's DROGUNE.com.
Yes, go read Dragoon. Please go read Dragoon. It's very good. You can follow me on Twitter at KyleJCRB. You can also check out kngi.org, where you can find archived episodes of the Bumblecast in MP3 downloadable format for your listening pleasure on any device. You'll also find the podcast feeds over there, links to everything related to the Bumblecast and all the other shows as well, including my show that I host every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time over there at kngi.org, Nitro Game Injection, video game music show where I play lots of video game music arrangements, remixes, covers, all that fun stuff, usually made by fans, and basically just spotlighting that whole video game music arrangement community. So be sure to go check that out. That's kngi.org.
You can contact and follow the show on Twitter at Bumblecast, email us at bumblecast@yahoo.com, and you can pick up episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or YouTube.
Don't forget to also check out the Bumble Store at shop.spreadshirt.com/bumblestore, where you can find all sorts of good merchandise to put in your good home or on your good body. Sure, do that. shop.spreadshirt.com/bumblestore. You can get logos. You can get our logo or our lovely faces printed on any sort of things that you would like mugs, hats, shirts,
circuit phone cases.
Sure, yeah, you can get a fancy phone case. I don't know what else is over there. Go look at it. Go find out for yourself. shop.spreadshirt.com/bumblestore.
And join us for live gaming streaming on Bumblecast Gaming Live now 3 times a week, if our health and schedules allow. Typically on...
I was going to say, yeah, schedules permitting.
usually on Sunday evening, Kyle.
You got Sundays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and then I will stream at 11:59 p.m. Wednesdays and Fridays. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Brain fart. Getting the grip.
That's okay. yeah, that's it. Good. Anyway, keep an eye on Twitter. You'll see announcements and stuff. So if there's like a time we can't stream or whatever, we'll announce it over there. Or when we are streaming, it'll also be over there. So keep an eye on Twitter.
That's going to wrap us up for this edition of the Bumblecast. Thank you so much. Kyle, I'll send you the bill for this therapy session. The rest of you have a wonderful week, and we'll catch you next time.
See you guys later. No. Well, I mean, truth be told, yeah, nobody watches this show, the Bumblecast, either, but that's expected.
You've been listening to The Bumblecast, a co-production of Bumble King Comics and the KNGI Network. Original theme music composed by Ken Coda Snyder. Remixed intro by T-Lopes. Find out more information, along with podcast feeder links, MP3 downloads, and more at bumbleking.com and kngi.org.
This really was therapeutic, you know, in a fashion. See, I don't usually get too riled up about things like this.
I know, it's funny.
Like, I don't, I'm usually pretty cool about, like, you know, stuff that like storylines, like shows and stuff. I just kind of, like, roll with it. Yeah, it's fine. Like Sonic, I just kind of roll with it. Like, yeah, whatever, at this point, it doesn't matter. Just do whatever you want to do. Fine, I don't care. But I got invested in this stupid CW show, and now it's like, now I'm just frustrated.
Kyle.
Yeah.
The show's done.
I know it's done, but that doesn't mean I don't have more to say. Doesn't mean I'm done. Just because the show's done doesn't mean I'm done.